Okay, this is Steven. I'm here at the Dania Beach Vintage Motorcycle Festival. I got my bike in the show. I've been posting some pictures on Instagram. It's a really good show, having a good time. And I'm sitting here with Frank, and Frank and I kind of started up a conversation because he's got an 850 Le Mans I was looking at that I like, and we started talking a little bit about racing, and then I noticed there's a bike over here that I took some pictures of that I like to call the Franken bike because it's got like a Frankenstein on the back of it. But Frank did a lot of the engineering on that bike, and there's some really cool features on it, and I want him to talk about it and tell me a little bit about what was involved in making that bike, a little bit about your background and your involvement with motorcycles, Moto Guzzi especially, and then about the Franken bike.
Okay, well, I first started working on motorcycles and enjoying motorcycles back in 1974, so that labels me as an old fart. I built my first cafe racer, a Norton Atlas, in 1975, and I've been building cafe racers and all kinds of weird bikes, but I didn't really get into it until about the 90s, and I started getting into the Italian bikes because they actually work much better than the British stuff, which does have its issues at times, and I experience every single one of them, especially on a cold, dark night pushing bikes. But that's another story. But anyway, so I was building Moto Guzzis. I like Moto Guzzis. Had a bunch of Ducatis, and last year I decided to start building a Moto Guzzi of my own. So I called my buddy Dave, and Dave shows. He says, "Yeah, I got two for sale," and that's how the whole thing started. At least with the Guzzis. So I started building the Guzzis. Right now, I'm up to 5 Guzzis because every time I turn around, I need a part. And it turned out it was cheaper to buy some old relics that look like they were parked at the bottom of the ocean than it is to buy the parts from some of the vendors. But, so that's where I'm at right now. I got a bunch of these projects going on. I really want to finish off my Eldorado so I can do a long ride up to Barber's Vintage Day Festival, which is really cool. I was there last year, blew me away. Very, very nice. I enjoyed it. To get back to the steampunk built, well, you know, I was looking at some cafe racers, and I seen this really nice CX500, affectionately known as the plastic maggot. I just learned another one today. The Germans call it the manure pumper. I can't do that in German, but the gentleman was very expressive. He says, "Ugliest damn things I ever seen, but this one looks kind of okay." So anyway, I looked through the paper, and lo and behold, $300 gets me two complete bikes with a spare engine, some spare parts, totally disassembled. What to do? Well, I build one for myself, and I call my buddy Abe up and say, "Hey, dude, let's build one of these." He says, "Okay." So I dump it off at his garage, and it looks like a mountain of greasy crap just sitting there. It's huge. I mean, it just this black hole of grease. He's looking at it and says, "I don't see anything in there." I said, it's there. It's there, really. No kidding. It can be a bike. I says, "I don't know, man. It's not doing me." So I had to put it together for the guy. Right in his garage. A couple of bolts. And I says, "Well, imagine a nice front end upside down." And this is on a 1980 bike. Come on. Front end upside down with massive brakes. Says, "Think about that. We'll do some steampunk thing, put some gears on it, some chains, some leather, yeah, some S&M thing going, whatever. You know, some good shit." And he says, "Yay, I'm beginning to see that now. Yeah, this is cool. Let's build one." So I drag all this crap home. eBay surfing nets us a nice 929 front end. Imagine this. This is going on a 1981 bike. I mean, really. Can you say overkill? So, of course, we put on the 929 brakes, you know, 300 millimeters or so with the 4 piston calipers and all this other stuff. And then we have to steampunk it. Man, what are you going to do there? Well, I started researching steampunk. I says the first thing that came to mind is we got to do something with the gear selectors. And the CX500 is kind of tough because the gear shifter doesn't run front to back. It runs across the bike. So, you know, after a night of heavy drinking and possibly other things, I put together this. I went out and bought some gears. And it didn't work out too good. So then I stopped at my friend's shop, who's very generous with his trash parts. Very generous. He lets me have stuff for free. God bless him. Anyway, so I looked at a Kawasaki cam. I said, "Hey, those gears look good. Do we have a chain in there somewhere?" Sure do. So I made the brackets, put the two gears together, put a chain on it, had to split the chain, six links, fun. Riveted it together, made the rear set. Man, instant gear shift, not bad. Okay, we got that under control. Now we have kind of a rolling chassis. The engine runs. What are we going to do with the leather? Of course, I stopped at the local Salvation Army, spent a whole whopping $5, put a leather strap on it. The rear tail section, oh, that was a nightmare. I had gotten by copper rivets, and I took two sheets of copper and riveted together and made it into a nice little section that kind of hid that ugly hump this bike has. Everybody usually picks up the seats by 2 inches, so this because they can't get rid of the hump. I molded the rear section over the hump, so this way it kind of hides it. It's still there, but you can't see it, so that's okay. So we got that going. Of course, the front fender, I have no idea where the hell that came from, but it was in the garage and it was free, so it was rusty. Yeah, a little bit of patina thing going. Riveted that together, went to Home Depot, got some 3/8 copper tubing. I bent that to the close to the right shape, riveted that to the fender. Yeah, this thing's beginning to look halfway decent, not bad. Made the exhaust system, scammed my friend out of a Ducati muffler from a late model 1190 or something. I don't even know what it is, but it looks nice. Man, it's brand new and it's free. I like free. Free works for me all the time. So we did that. And the bike is, of course, can't forget the carburetors. The carburetors, well, you can get carburetors relatively cheap as long as they're made for snowmobiles. So I got myself 2 flat slide 38 millimeter Mikunis for a whopping sum of $60 delivered to the house. Of course, some assembly was required. I had to split them apart, widen them. And of course, jetting was a lot of fun, but plugged right in. Bike sounds good, runs good, everybody happy. We had to get an electronic ignition all the way from the Czech Republic because these things, all the electronic ignitions are junk. So now I gave it back to my buddy, and he took it all apart. He painted it, put it all back together, put a couple of the nice little touches on there, did a nice job. And every once in a while, we enter in a show. We never win. We don't expect to win because it doesn't fit anything. No category. It's not a cafe racer. It's not a rat bike. It's not a... I have no idea what the hell it is. But every time I park it, everybody crowds around it. So people really like this thing. It, from small kids to old people, amazing. It totally blows me away that so many people, and I love their reaction. They'll be laughing and pointing, and they'll be on their knees.
Where did the little Frankenstein come from that's on that?
The Frankenstein was a gift to the owner of the bike, which is Abe, and his son gave it to him a long time ago. And he thought it'd be kind of cool putting a Frankenstein on a Franken bike, which I kind of think is very fitting. It's really cool. And that draws a lot of people in because that's the first thing they notice. Then they notice the actual bike and the build. So it was a nice, fun build. We had a hell of a we had a great time building it, and we enjoy showing it to the public. I think.
What do you got right now in the works? What project are you working on right now?
Well, I have at least 3 or 4 Moto Guzzis in the works at this time. There is a 450 Cafe racer project that I started that I had to ship off to my friend's house because I don't have any room in the garage. And I have a CX that I want to finish off as a steampunk too, which is quite a bit different from this one, but along the same lines. But I can't be copying. I can't be making 2 of the same bikes. I just don't have that much luck in finding the right parts. So there's quite a bit. And, of course, there's always the odd person who shows up with some Moto Guzzi thingy that looks like it was parked in the bottom of the ocean. I shall leave their name unmentioned. And they want their bikes fixed. So that takes quite a bit of my time. So it's I have a busy schedule.
Tell us where we can find you on ADV Rider. You said you got a thread going on ADV.
I started a thread on these 5.5 Guzzis that kind of morphed from 2 Guzzis, and the place to find it would be in the Some assembly required. My name is Scudman on the forum. And you might get a chuckle out of it. There's a lot of technical information there. And you might learn something about some of these modifications. I will be explaining in detail how to build a hybrid electronic ignition device for like $20. It still uses the points, and you should be able to, in case your electronic ignition fails, you should be able to convert it right back on the side of the road, because that's the biggest problem. If your ignition fails electronic, you better have a cell phone. Without the cell phone, you're not going anywhere. But by taking the load off the points, you still have the points there that will last a very, very long time, and you can still convert them right back instantly just by unplugging a wire and plugging it in. It's a great help. The other big modification, and I got this from Adventure Riders, we drilled the 850 Eldorado to be able to put a late model oil filter, still in the pan, on the bike, but at least it doesn't have a screen. So it's much better. I want to have longevity out of this bike. And the third thing that I really did, which I like, I have been putting 40-watt or even 50-watt alternators on the bike, which gives you all the juice you'll ever need. You can run anything, because this thing is actually used in cars. So you can plug in your West and whatever farcles you seem necessary for a long trip. So that should be a nice bike. I want to have that completed by October. Hopefully I'll get there, but there's another Moto Guzzi Cafe project. Anyway, I could go on and on this stuff.
Listen, it was really great talking to you. Do me a favor and send me pictures of the projects so we can share them with the listeners and they can see what it looks like. Are you going to post all these projects on ADV, Ryder?
Posting takes a tremendous amount of time. It's kind of disheartening when you spend so much time posting and trying to come up with something that's funny and you get no replies. Yeah, it's kind of a pain in the butt. You know, out of 800 views that I got on this, I got like two replies. Not very high, no, not a lot, but I understand a lot of people just don't want to reply. They just look, and that's okay too. But, you know, you need some encouragement. Otherwise, what's the point of posting if nobody even tells you? I mean, tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about. Tell me I'm wrong or I'm right or whatever. I don't care. Do something. But at least reply.
We get good feedback for the show whenever we post photos on either the Facebook page or the website. But I think, and a lot of people just like to see what's being built out there by regular guys. You know, by not some high-dollar shop or some high-profile builder, but by regular guys that are building bikes, you know, on a daily basis and that are riders. They're rideable bikes, too. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing. You gave me some good advice today about racing and about the starter on my bike. So hopefully we're going to hear more from you in the future.
Well, I appreciate the kind comments. You're absolutely right. I'm certainly not a high-end shop. I do everything in my garage. I'm fortunate enough to have pretty much all the toolings, but I don't have to rely on anybody unless it's something unique like this oil conversion. For my Eldo, which needed to have a hole drilled 5 1/4 inches deep into an aluminum case. That one, I says, you know, I'll give it to my good buddy, the tool maker, and he did a spectacular job. So sometimes I do have to farm things out, but I pretty much build everything myself. And if I can't, I'll figure out a way that I don't have to do it at all. So it's something that everybody can do, but you need a lot of tooling, and that's expensive. But once you see how it's done, maybe you can come up with something that's more unique and easier to do, and you don't need the expensive tools. So it does give people ideas, and I do like to see people actually build something. I get impressed with somebody building a bracket. I don't get impressed with somebody buying a bracket. You know, it's build something. Get in your garage, take a file, take a drill press, make a hole somewhere. Even if it's carby, next time it won't be as bad. It'll be better.
Good advice. All right. Thanks a lot, Frank. Appreciate you sitting with me. It's Steven again, Cafe Racer Podcast. We'll see you guys in a little bit.
Bye.
Okay, I'm back. It's Steven again, Dania Beach Vintage Motorcycle Festival. And I'm sitting by on my bike, and I'm parked next to my showmate, who's got two really, really cool bikes in the show that he built himself. This is Richard Nixon, not the former president, but the bike builder. Start off, Richard, telling me a little bit about yourself, your background. You know, have you been in motorcycles? How long did you own a shop? Were you a builder? And what you got, what you brought for the show today?
My background is I'm a mechanical inspector for a local city here. I've always been the type of guy that just loved making stuff out of metal. I've never owned a shop. But actually, I used to be a competitive triathlete. And about 5 years ago, retired. And I sold one of my race bikes and bought a motorcycle. And ever since then, I've just been hooked on it. I just love it.
What do you got here? What'd you bring for the show?
I have a 1967 Triton. For you guys that aren't familiar with that, it's a Norton featherbed frame with a Triumph motor stuck in it, and a 1967 BSA 250 Starfire that I also have done up in a cafe trim.
You told me that when you got the Triton originally, it was a basket case.
Both bikes were a basket case. I bought the frame and the front end and hubs from one gentleman, the engine from another gentleman, and then all the other parts I either made or found new old stock stuff or stuff I just reconditioned. One thing that I'm very passionate about is not putting repop stuff on the bikes. I just love using parts that are, from that time period and either fixing them and reconditioning them or putting them back into good use.
Both of them are beautiful bikes, and the Triton looks like it was brand new. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm looking at a bike that it really looks like it came off the showroom floor. And it's all vintage parts on it. It's correct, and it's nice. The BSA, the 250, is your wife's bike, right?
Yeah, I built that one for the wife. The goal there was, she's a little vertically challenged, so it's a nice little small bike, and then to swap out a lot of the parts for lightweight aluminum stuff, so it was easy for her to to balance and maneuver.
I got a question now. I noticed on the 250 there's a compression release on that bike. Why do you see those sometimes on the smaller displacement bikes and not on the larger bikes?
From my understanding, it was back then it's pretty hard to kick over. A lot of them were 10-to-1 compression. So yeah, I guess they figured a small bike, small engine, maybe a smaller person. So maybe it was a little more attractive for them to put in a compression release to make it more attractive for a smaller person. And that was a great added benefit for me, again, for my wife.
Very cool. Both bikes are really nice. Listen, Rich, thanks for taking the time to sit down and talk to me on your builds. They're both really, really nice bikes, and I hope you win something with one of them. Again, Steven here, Cafe Racer Podcast. We'll see you guys soon. Okay, I'm back. Steven here again, Cafe Racer Podcast. And for those of you that don't know, we also have a little side project called ADV Cafe because Crash and I are both ADV riders. And like getting out on adventures and off-road. And I'm standing here with Doug Watke. If you guys don't know who that is, he's the guy that he's around the world, Doug. He's got the Harley Bagger that's probably one of the coolest looking bikes you've ever seen with a giant metal box on the side. And Doug's had that bike pretty much everywhere. And I've listened to him on Side Stand Up do an interview about some of the treacherous areas he's taken that, probably close to 1,000 pounds, that bike. What do you think it weighs?
I've never had it weighed, so I don't have a clue. I would guess close to 1,200 with gear and stuff.
Doug, tell...
I can't pick it up and carry it, so it's pretty heavy.
Yeah, no, and it's got a lot of stuff on it. For the people that don't know out there, just give me a brief synopsis of where you've been with that bike. And I know it's going to be hard to give it brief, but tell us a little bit about where that bike's been.
Oh, this one,
how about you in general on motorcycles?
Around the world 4 times. Went through the Middle East. Did the Transamerica Trail on this Harley with the sidecar. Did the last Cannonball, building a bike for this Cannonball, and just here and there.
Somebody said recently you've been in Afghanistan. Were you there?
I was on the Afghan border in Tajikistan for about 3 days. I didn't get an Afghani visa. I did get woke up camping by machine gun fire one night, but I rode across Iraq on my old Harley Shovelhead a few years ago.
What was that like? I mean, I know from talking to people that have been in countries like Iran and Iraq that they said the people there are usually very friendly.
Oh, the people there were wonderful. And even the military, when they arrested me, was really polite. And when they finally decided to let me go, then they were, you know, patting me on the back and saying, oh, well, we're not used to having tourists. We didn't know how to act. You know, I'm like, well, this is why you don't have tourists. I'll be going now.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because recently I've heard a lot of people talk about how don't worry about the safety of a country. Just go do the trip. And you're like a testament to that, especially 4 times around the world. Was there ever a time where you felt like, you know, this is it, I'm done, because it's just too much to deal with?
Well, there was times when if someone would have offered me a one-way ticket home on an airplane, I'd have considered it. But, you know, I always persevered and fixed things that broke and, you know, just dealt with it. And if things got really bad and I'd take a day off and just chill out for a little while and, you know, it gets better.
Speaking of fixing things that broke, what's the longest you've ever had to wait for either a part or to fix something?
I was stuck in Armenia. I was on my shovel head, the same one I took to Iraq, and I had a tappet lifter fall apart right on the Iranian border. And so I got the bike back to a town, and I was stuck there about a week, and through a network of people from Adventure Rider and everything, found guys in California that bought the parts I needed, gave them to a guy that knew a guy that was flying to Armenia from California. I met him at the airport, got my parts, and back on the road. So I was down for about a week that time.
And considering nowadays what it takes to go to a dealership and order a part, that's about the same time, really.
Yeah, just Armenia is more interesting to be stuck in than like Boise.
I've never been to either once, but I'm going to take your word for it. Out of all the places you've been to, what did you think was the most beautiful?
Tajikistan.
What's the terrain like? Is it mountainous or desert?
Yes, the Pamir Mountains. I went over a pass on my Sportster. It was over 15,000 feet, and neither me or the bike were able to breathe very good, but we made it. And at the time, my alternator had crapped out, so I was running on, you know, when I could charge the battery. And it made it, and we, you know, but it was, as far as beauty goes, I haven't been anywhere that topped Tajikistan yet.
It's amazing, really. How about in the United States, favorite place?
Probably the Redwoods. It's just amazing. It's like going back in time a million years. These huge trees, and you can't see the sky. And, I mean, there's any kind of ride you'd want to do is here. There's no reason to go anywhere else other than the people. I like meeting people from different cultures. But, yeah, the Redwoods in the U.S. has got to be at least my top three, if not my favorite.
Interesting. Doug, do me a favor and tell me where people can find your blog and where with the forum on ADV. There's a large thread as well. I think it's the largest thread on ADV. But tell us where we can find you.
My website is motosapiens.org. And on ADV, I'm RTW Doug. And, yeah, I have several threads on there and a garage blog, and most of my trips are on there.
Yeah, I've read a lot of them, and it's really interesting, and I'm glad to finally meet you. And it's cool seeing you here at the Dania Beach Vintage Festival. And next trip, what's the next adventure going to be?
Well, I'll be in Europe for a bit this summer, but not real long. I'm coming back to do the Cannonball this summer in September on building a custom 29 Harley JD. And it's going from Daytona Beach to Tacoma, Washington.
Cannonball's all vintage bikes, right?
Yeah, this year it's 1936 is the cutoff, so it has to be 1936 or earlier.
All right, cool, Doug. It was really a pleasure to meet you, and thanks for sitting for an interview. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, and nice meeting you also.
Talk to you guys later.